The MadTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the MadTech Podcast, our weekly forage through the bushes of media, marketing and commerce news. I'm delighted to be joined by not one but two stalwarts of the ExchangeWire C-suite today. And joining us first up is Rachel Smith, CEO of ExchangeWire. Hello to you, Rachel.
Hello, Matt. Very excited to be foraging through the bushes.
We've gone for a natural start for today's podcast. And also joining us is Lindsay Roundtree, COO at ExchangeWire. Hello to you, Lindsay.
Hello. Also very delighted to be foraging through the bushes. Is that what you said?
Yes.
I tuned it out because it's just hilarious. Absolutely brilliant. What an intro.
I decided to spice things up a little bit. We'll refrain from doing that in future.
No. I disagree.
Refraining necessary. Bring it on.
Excellent. We'll dive straight into the news this week. And the first news story is that Walmart has entered an agreement to purchase TV, OS and hardware manufacturer Vizio for $2.3 billion. According to Walmart, the acquisition will enable the retail giant to connect its customers with innovative television and entertainment experiences, while of course packaging their data for advertisers and selling them lots of lovely groceries. So my first question to you guys on this one is, how does this acquisition affect Walmart's retail media strategy? Rachel, let's start with you.
I think it gives it an enormous boost. I think it won't come as a surprise to anyone that's following anything in the retail media industry, particularly in the US, that Walmart's already got a really successful retail business, obviously, and they're building out a retail media offering. I think their acquisition of Vizio just, is them putting a stake in the ground around their advertising business. And I think I read somewhere earlier this week as well that they make more money at the moment from their advertising business than they do from their retail business. So I think this is them adding to that, I'm going to call it a cash cow. I don't know if that's exactly how they see it, but it feels as though this is Walmart definitely beefing up their advertising game, and an acquisition of a TV business, if you like, hardware and streaming operating system, I think is a really good add-on to that advertising business. I think it also, the game changer as well, obviously, is having the opportunity to tie potentially data sets together. So data sets from their retail side of the business, whether that's actually in-store retail together with their retail media network and their online data that they're able to gather through that retail media network, and then any data that they can be gathering from shoppers who purchase Vizio TV sets, smart TV sets, and that I think gives them a wealth of opportunity to stitch data sets together and potentially boost and enhance their advertising efforts to really assure brands that they'll be reaching very targeted audiences, and they'll be able to get those brands' products right in front of audiences in one of the biggest screens in the house. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a huge story, a really, one could argue smart acquisition, and it's going to be fascinating to see how it shakes out because it puts them in direct competition with the likes of Amazon, who've also got a massive, e-com business building out a retail media network, and, they also have smart TV hardware through Amazon Fire as well.
Yeah, completely agree. And I think to the point on the margins, they're absolutely ridiculous. So I think Walmart's overall margins are around 4%. Vizio's advertising business, 61% margin. So you can see just how much of it is a profitability play. Lindsay, what are your thoughts on this one, and how does this shake up their retail media and TV strategies?
I mean, that really shows you, doesn't it? If you're in retail, don't be in retail. If you are in retail, build a retail media network.
Why sell stuff?
You
can
into advertising.
Unbelievable.
I mean, surely some of that is associated with the cost of bricks and mortar,
yeah,
right? So it's going to be, but that's what makes the story all the more interesting. Sorry, Lindsay, I'll let you speak. It's that traditional retailer, bricks and mortar background, and look what they're doing with the business now.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, CPG, FMCG retail margins are really, really low. Of course they are. It's a volume game, right? So it makes sense that if you are trying to work out where you can grow. And obviously Walmart sell more than just CPG, but if you're trying to work out where you can grow, this is a really logical place. And the acquisition does feel quite synergistic. And as Rachel said, we are seeing it from Amazon. This makes them a really viable competitor to Amazon, like a really viable competitor. And I think Kroger have done something similar as well with streaming and CTV. I think that this obviously gives Walmart a massive leg up in the CTV race. And I think that what's interesting is that I feel like we're creating like a new gaffer for retail media. And for those that we haven't mentioned gaffer in a while, actually, but Google, Amazon, Facebook, and Apple. But I think that there's going to be this new suite of walled gardens existing within the retail media space. And what I think's weird, like, I think that this is going to create both, like, it's going to create a bit of a paradox. It's going to create both fragmentation and consolidation kind of all at the same time, because you're consolidating retail media into a number of networks, and that's going to make it interesting for advertisers, make it on the one hand maybe easier, on the other hand more complicated, because they're having to go to different places. They can't buy, they don't have to buy as easily from one place that plugs into everything as they could before. But on the other hand, it's going to cause more fragmentation, because with the CTV market already being pretty fragmented. Let's try that one again. With the CTV market
tripping over a few bushes there, Lizzie.
I'm tripping over. Well, the foraging is getting to me. Yeah, absolutely.
There's lots of roots to fall over. It's a challenging thing to negotiate.
I mean, I'm clumsy at the best of times, so this feels very appropriate. But with the CTV market in the US already being very fragmented, with Walmart buying Vizio, that just on the one hand consolidates things for them, but it will fragment the CTV market even more, and it will give great scale, but also maybe less scale for advertisers. I don't know. I feel like this is going to cause complexities, further complexities than what already exist, because we're seeing so much movement happening in the CTV market in the US all the time. There's always acquisitions happening. There's always divestments happening. This is just another part of that. But Vizio itself is obviously an interesting company because it has access directly into US households with the smart TV play. So I think that's going to be very interesting for Walmart, like so interesting for Walmart to be able to basically never leave their consumers' homes. I mean, how exciting is that for the average consumer to know that wherever you go, Walmart's there.
That's it. They're going to be following you around as if they weren't already.
But yeah, absolutely. On that point, I think Vizio's it's 80 million households it reaches either through its hardware or through its TVOS. And, you know, compare that with other panels. Nielsen, I jotted down 42,000 households. So you can see that the level of scale difference they now have. But yeah, what are the potential effects? You've touched on it there, Lindsay, in terms of that consolidation, but yet fragmentation. What effects could that possibly have on the TV market?
I mean, if you just think about this for a second from a consumer's point of view, sort of additional competition and ramping up in the fierceness of that competition is usually good news mostly for consumers, because it doesn't just provide them with choice, but it usually provides them with some kind of price war and price comparison. So, you know, there was a part of me that thought, well, this could start to get really interesting, because Walmart is now incentivized to ensure that their shoppers buy Vizio TV sets, which gives an extra layer of competition just in the hardware market. And then, you know, you're thinking about what else might draw those consumers into buying those smart TVs, which will include whatever else might be available via the streaming service, which is already a compelling offering, having been adopted by a huge volume of customers anyway. So then does that put Vizio and their streaming offering in direct competition with the likes of other streaming providers like Roku, who are now sort of slightly in that basket of competing with the incumbents and the big guys like the Netflix and the Amazon Primes? And I sort of feel like if I'd said that sentence even 12 months ago, you just wouldn't have been able to put Roku and other providers like that in the same category as Netflix and even Amazon Prime. But I sort of feel like you can now, because the playing field's becoming a little more leveled. All of those original streaming services like Netflix are now have now got ad-funded models. Amazon Prime are introducing all sorts of tiers of ad funding to their services. So I feel like it's making those other competitive services all the more competitive and alluring for the consumer. So I feel that that has a somewhat sort of, leveling of the playing field effect, which is generally speaking good for consumers. Of course, Lindsay, you touched on the fragmentation point, that that's not just going to occur on the advertising side, you know, for those that are looking to either execute, for brands that are looking for audiences, for those that are looking to, for tech solutions that are looking to support the execution of marketing and advertising campaigns. But there's also going to be fragmentation for consumers. But we sort of kind of cope with that, right? Like, you know, the TV market is getting more fragmented. As soon as, you know, Netflix and Amazon Prime introduced viable ad-funded options and subscription services, I feel like that just made it all that more competitive. And I feel as though we're now in a position where it's perfectly accepted that whenever you're talking with friends and family about a film or a TV series that you want to watch, the first question is, where can I watch it? And no one kind of goes, oh my God, I've got to have another subscription service to watch this. You just fully accept that there's going to be, you know, at least four or so potential places that you can watch it, or maybe only one of four, and you've got to get in on that subscription service to in order to watch that content. So I just kind of feel like that level of competition is going to be tolerated by consumers because there will be some upsides and benefits to it. There will be that level of fragmentation, though, on the sort of advertising and marketing execution side might get really tiresome really quickly, and I'm not sure what that's going to feel like for brands and advertisers and marketers, and also what it's going to do to the effectiveness of their, of their marketing spend, how they're going to prove how well their marketing spend is performing in a whole range of different walled gardens, shall we call them.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with all of that. I think that you're absolutely right, Rachel, that fragmentation brings about with it both positivities and positives and negatives, basically. And I think that you're right that there's going to be a lot more, like, diversity is a good thing. Like, there's diversity in choice, diversity in the types of brands you can choose in terms from a hardware perspective, also from a channel perspective. And then there's also generally the consumers have more choice that can help bring prices down. But I think that from a brand perspective, multiple platforms that they have to buy across just means multiple complexities. And it can often mean that the smaller platforms then lose out. So
exactly.
Because the bigger platforms have the scale, they make it easier for you to buy through them. And that's great for Walmart.
The integrations.
That's great for Walmart because Walmart will do really well out of this. But I worry that the smaller platforms might struggle because they're going to go, well, why would I go to you anyway? Because I'm just buying everything through Walmart. So what can you offer me outside of what Walmart and Amazon can already, and Netflix is bringing the other streamers that are ad funded as well. What can you offer me outside of what they can bring to the table? And, from Vizio's perspective, Vizio was an independent company being able to target, bring really kind of rich, diverse data offerings. Now they're part of Walmart. How accessible will that data be? Will it just be data that's only used by Walmart? Will Walmart give access to it to other people? Does that then make the measurement and targeting available in the CTV space in the US by a smaller pool than what there was before? Does that make it more fragmented or more consolidated? I'm not sure yet. And I think that it's going to make targeting, when there's more platforms to target over, it could make targeting more complicated. But I mean, I'm so interested by it. I think it's fascinating. It's one of those things that we're seeing these massive moves in the US. There's not many markets you can replicate that kind of thing in. So Walmart Connect is going to be a huge kind of US play. I wonder what will happen with the other big supermarkets,
retail media networks.
Exactly, retail media networks, retail media companies that are going into the retail media space when it comes to the likes of CTV in other markets as well.
I mean, I think you hit on a really important point there, Lindsay, which is that ultimately brands and marketers are going to put budgets where it's easiest to get potential maximum return, right? And that's how dominant players in the market become those dominant players, because they make it super easy for marketers and brands to dedicate their budgets in those environments. And what you want to see coming out of this is more diversity, but you also want to see, that ease of execution as well. So what would be good is if this inspires in other markets that, albeit might not be the same size as the US, it inspires in other markets certain partnerships that enable that. And in addition to that, we need to see the sort of rising up of tech tools and platforms that enable brands and marketers to track their spend across a variety of TV touch points and TV platforms, because that's what's then going to enable some of those budgets to flow to the smaller providers who there will, and there will always be a place in the market for them if they can offer particular niche services or they've got some other kind of competitive element. And, you know, what we need to see is the infrastructure, the technology infrastructure in the CTV environment in other markets outside the US enable that. Yeah, there's definite opportunity. I mean, I think this is a story of opportunity. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the US, and it'd be great to see some players in European markets and, you know, and other more sophisticated markets consider these moves.
100% agree. And I think in terms of how easy it is for the smaller players to compete, I think one final point is that there could be potential roadblocks because the US FTC and DOJ are taking a lot more closer look at competition now. So they're obviously looking at the Kroger-Albertson merger. So I think they're looking at that. And I feel if they can, you know, if they find that this move would, you know, potentially limit competition, obviously they've got partnerships with Yahoo in terms of the DSP at the moment, and obviously Roku in terms of its own brand on devices. If this, you know, if they feel, oh, we'll just consolidate everything towards Vizio now, maybe, you know, maybe they'll take a look at it. But so many interesting questions on this one. And I think it's one that's going to absolutely run and run. But I'm going to move us on to our next story now. And it's the first of a Google doubleheader. A deal worth $60 million per year will give Google real-time access to Reddit's data, providing the tech giant with more efficient ways to train AI models. As well as the cash influx, the deal will allow Reddit to use Google AI for its search functionality. My first question to you guys on this one is, as the privacy landscape evolves, could this deal encounter issues down the line relating to consumer data privacy? Lindsay, let's start with you.
Yes, I really do. Yeah. I mean, I'm quite fascinated by this story because first of all, I think Reddit need this. Like, Reddit need the money.
Their plans for IPO are looking a little...
They're not great, are they? And they're really highlighting how, like, poorly...
How little cash they have.
how unprofitable they've been over the past
really
two decades.
They really stretched the bush and hedges analogy. They're in a right thicket right now, so...
Love that. They're in a right thicket. They really are. This is great for Reddit on that front. I've got so many questions around it that are going to be, I think, remain unanswered because it's Google, right? And they don't answer any questions. But I think that there's going to be definitely like data privacy and data sharing concerns. As there would be when any collaboration like this happens across any kind of big major platforms, that's to be expected. But I think as a user, you're going to want to know, well, what data is being shared? How's Google using it? Many people on Reddit are a bit more savvy than your average internet user. So that I think those questions could be raised more than they might be more generally across the wider populace of the internet as to what Google does with my data. Most people don't even realize Google has anything with data. But I think on Reddit, there'll be more questions asked. There'll be more subreddits being created about this thing. I mean, Reddit users are already pissed off about the IPO, right? They're already not happy about it. Like, they will... Reddit users are very happy to revolt when they need to. And I think this could be an example where they kind of go, well, hang on a second, what are Google going to be doing here? And they'll want that. I think there'll be a higher prevalence of them wanting to know what's being done with their data. They'll want to be able to have consent over what's done with their data and want to be able to kind of clearly be able to opt out of it, I feel. But I just feel like there's also just going to be, I feel like more generally, Google using this to train its AI, train its LLM, most things need to be built on fact, surely. Reddit is not a fact-based platform. Reddit is a largely opinion and nonsense-based platform. I'm so interested as to how Google can use the data on Reddit and the information shared on Reddit to build anything that is going to be deemed as remotely viable. That's my big question. And I'm like, have I misunderstood the purpose of this partnership? Because that, to me, just doesn't feel like it's going to be... I mean, you may as well use Facebook to train your AI language
model. I mean, it's interesting that you say that because when I read it... I thought, do I not understand what Reddit's for? Because I also think it's largely a platform for a whole load of nonsense, like many other platforms. And I thought, well, perhaps actually it's a bit more meaningful than that. And, you know, so I thought I'd got that element of it wrong, but perhaps I haven't. So it does beg the question, why on earth are Google potentially going to them to train their language models? And we're all in a bit of trouble if that's how we're going to train our AI language models. I think that's everyone's concern, really, isn't it? That it's going to be largely based on opinion and social media driven popularity contests, and that will be a disaster for humanity. But there's another side to this. I wondered if it was the start of Google getting a bit anxious about search, because their sort of exchange, if you like, the partnership exchange element with Reddit was that Reddit then get access to this Google IA tool, which helps companies improve their search results. And so it made me think perhaps that's what's kind of going on here a little bit as well, because if you do use Google Chrome for search these days, I mean, it is pretty rubbish, but if you still try to use it, search results that come very high up the page are typically Reddit results, depending on whatever it is that you're searching. And people, I think, you know, when it is a bit more philosophical, maybe the questions that you might be asking or typing into a search engine, people are now more routinely going to an AI language model platform to ask those questions. So I just wondered if this was Google trying to head all of this off at the pass and bake it into their search functionality in a way that's going to make it, you know, appear and behave a little bit more like ChatGPT or any other language AI language model. But I also thought that it was remarkable that the Reddit CEO sort of, it seemed very casually remarked that this is an opportunity for them to consider more data licensing deals and a new revenue stream for the business. And I thought to myself, in a privacy kind of context, that's not the first thing that the chief exec usually comes out and says, which is, we need more money. Why don't we sell some data? That's a great idea. Like, let's just make money out of the data that we've got of all of our users. Like, it just sort of seemed a bit, you know, opposed to the principles of user privacy and sort of prioritizing the user experience. But like you said at the start of this, and I concur, Reddit is in a financial hole, and I guess they, when you're looking for, you know, diversification for your monetization strategies, you look everywhere, and they, you know, clearly understand that data is one of their most valuable assets.
Yeah.
It's just curious that the headline here is about the partnership with Reddit, not how they're actually going to make it work from a data privacy point of view. And we all know, pretty much, it's very unlikely to get past any approvals from regulators if it doesn't concur with data privacy requirements. So what's going to happen next would be my question.
I think that you've raised two interesting points there. The first one about kind of Google not being the platform of choice for search anymore. Like, I'm one of those people that basically uses ChatGPT as my search engine unless I'm buying something. Or it's a product-led search, I will then go to, I will either use ChatGPT or I'll use Bing Copilot for everything. Mm-hmm. And then I will use Google if I'm buying something, because unfortunately Bing just isn't that good yet for that kind of stuff. But it's interesting. Yeah, Google search is in trouble because they've been leader of the pack for so long. I wonder, there's going to be a time soon when Google search is no longer endemic, and they need to insert themselves into everything. Like, they already last year had the problem with the deal they've made with Apple to use Google as a search platform, search functionality on Safari on iPhones. That was kind of deemed as uncompetitive. So they, you know, there's already question marks around kind of where they are inserting themselves and if it's legal to do so or not, whatever. I think that you're right. And then the use of AI and the fact that they're trying to work out how to change their own search results and search functions. They're playing around with a lot of stuff at the moment. People aren't very happy about it. I think it looks ridiculous. I don't know what's going on. I don't know. I search something, I don't really know what I'm looking at anymore. And that's fine. Google are always testing. But I think that you're right that Google needs to be able to insert its things in more pies. And that's really interesting. And the other thing that I was thinking when you were talking, actually, when you were saying about why they might have done it, while Reddit is not where you go to get facts, because why would you use a forum for that? It's like, why would you use, are you going to use Mumsnet to train you on, to create a GPT on motherhood? Like, I wouldn't, because it's a forum. I really wouldn't. It's not full of fact-based stuff there. But you could use it to help train style and help train communication style, understanding kind of the nuances between different types of communication. I guess from that perspective, it could be interesting. And the other thing that you talked about, and I've forgotten what it was, but it's about why would the CEO kind of go, yeah, let's sell everyone's data. I guess that's a really good, interesting point. And I guess that it's what every publisher, if you think of Reddit as a publisher rather than a platform, it's what every publisher is having to do right now. Every publisher is having to double down on first-party data. Reddit has a ton of it. Now, most publishers are packaging up their data to be able to sell to advertisers and help advertisers target their site better, not sell to Google. But, you know, needs must when you're trying to IPO and it's not going very well.
I mean, that's a really good point, Lindsay. You're right. It's usually to drive better advertising and to attract more brands to try to connect directly with your audiences. And yeah, maybe they're backed into a corner and so they feel like data licensing deals is the way forward. But it just, the problem is just those words all put together, data licensing deals, is just like a massive rah, rah, rah for privacy. Yeah. Like you may as well just get a direct hotline to all the privacy legislators. And I just don't think that data licensing deals plural is going to go very far if they can't wrap their heads around that. No doubt that has been one of their priorities.
Yeah.
Would be looking into how this could actually work. But yeah, I don't know. It just all feels messy, and I find it also amusing that a company like Reddit is IPOing anyway, because I just think of it as a really kind of unuser friendly chat room from the early 2000s. I know it's more than that, but you know.
If there are any Reddit listeners, that's what I see. They'll be after you, Rachel, for
no. Yeah.
I know, you'll have a subreddit dedicated to this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Bring down Rachel Smith.
Oh no, I don't need that.
But
I'm going to hide in the bushes. I'm hiding in the bushes.
In the thicket that Reddit's currently in.
Yeah, the fall.
That's it. Yeah.
But yeah, I think sort of my final points on this one is, to me, 60 million seems cheap. Like, this is all their user data, and they're just, you know, especially when they're trying to monetize an IPO and say, oh, we're, you know, going to be a $1 billion company. Why would you then give all your data away for $60 million, which, you know, in today's market, in terms of tech platforms, really isn't that much at all. And I think in terms of the data privacy play, there's also a really interesting story around copyright around this, because I feel if people are, you know, they use Reddit to comment on things, write about things, you know, if you had a subreddit dedicated to, say, an author, for example, you'd probably be able to pull enough content from the subreddit discussing a book to make that into a book. So I feel this, from Google's perspective, this could be a sneaky little backdoor way of trying to get around some of the copyright legislation, and they can hold their hands up and say, we didn't copy it from the book. No, you just copied it from people talking about it.
That's very interesting.
But they may not be doing that, but yes, I shall remain cynical when it comes to Google and that kind of thing. But we'll move on to our third news story of the week. We did cover a fair few points from it, but it's also a good one to discuss. And that's that Google has been testing the removal of the news tab from its search results. They explained that the change was part of ongoing testing on ways of showing filters and have since confirmed that they're not planning on removing it. But let's see how that will actually shake out. What my question to you guys is, what impact would this change have on news publishers, and how would removing the news tab affect them going forward? Rachel?
Bad news for news publishers, I think, but also for users alike. I just think, you know, as Lindsay mentioned before, of course, Google tests things all the time and changes things all the time. They're always looking to improve and innovate, you know, the search experience and the experience on, you know, in their browser. So fair enough. But I do think that there should be somewhere to easily discern information and search results based on a number of basic categories, and news is one of them, right? So, you know, if I think about the categories that I use, general, images, and news, and then maybe shopping, and it would just be a shame to lose that categorization. for the time being, when you're still used to going to a browser like Chrome to find information out and to get access to other, you know, to other information or to, you know, to sort of move on to accessing in more detail information directly from publishers' websites. So I think it would be bad news for publishers. But, you know, there's no surprise there. It begs the question, how do publishers move away from an environment where they're so heavily reliant on the way that they appear in search results? You know, there was all sorts of controversy that kicked up recently about Google potentially removing the links to various news sites and publisher sites and instead inserting AI descriptors of what the particular story might be talking about. There's a long, you know, history really in the world of digital information consumption between publishers and search engines, including Google, as to how any of their content becomes made discoverable and made available via browsers and search engines, and you know, to what extent that content becomes syndicated or paid for or supported in any way by those browsers. And very interestingly, I read here in the media the other day in Australia that the Australian News Bargaining Code that was put in place about 5 years ago is due to be sort of, if you like, renegotiated. You know, what's in the news is that it's likely to be renegotiated. And it was a code that was brought down in legislation by the government to ensure that major news publishers got paid by technology companies that were using those news stories and articles and links to news stories and articles in search results on their platforms, but not crediting those publishers necessarily, and certainly not in any financial sense because they were selling advertising against those results. And so the bargaining code put something in place to prevent technology companies from doing that. Actually, what ended up happening is it just encouraged those technology companies to broker a financial deal and arrangement directly with those news publishers. Now, you can argue about whether that is the right thing to do or not, but the point is publishers were getting compensated for the, you know, original journalist-led content that they are making available for free on the internet, and they were finally getting compensated for that in an appropriate way by technology companies that were using that information to boost their search results, to boost their website traffic and also to make money from advertising. So, you know, I think this sort of is a thread of that same argument. What should publishers be doing to protect themselves from indiscriminate changes that could be made at any moment that might have a huge impact on the volume of traffic that visits their site? I don't quite know what the answer is, because actually if we're all going to go towards using, you know, AI language models for search rather than browsers, well, how on earth will any of that traffic get referred onto publishers? So in a world where we're still using browsers and search engines, I feel as though really we have a duty to be doing everything possible to support the discovery of publishers' businesses. Otherwise, we really are going to disappear down an AI language model trained hole that could be based largely on opinions and, you know, popularity contests instead of facts.
Yeah, Lindsay, what do you think on that, and how, you know, should we be worried about our collective reliance on these tech giants?
Yeah, I mean, Rachel did a kind of pretty good sort of call to arms there, really. I think we definitely should be worried. And I think that Google made us reliant on them. And Google, obviously, in the relationship, holds all the power. I think them playing around with the news tab kind of fell under the radar a bit, because it was only experienced by kind of a few people, as is always the case when they test things. And getting rid of the news tab is fine if they are planning on adjusting the search engine results page to include news articles where appropriate. News tabs don't always appear for every result because they're not relevant for every result, obviously. But if I'm searching, I think the example that was given in the article was that somebody was panicking. They couldn't find the news tab anywhere. So then they searched something that would definitely have news on it, like Julian Assange. Julian Assange, tons of news on him. And they couldn't find a news tab for Julian Assange. They were like, well, how do I find out news about Julian Assange if there's no, like, what do I do now? And that is the, I mean, that's just foolish, really, because, you know, that just means that's another reason for you not to use Google. If I can't even get my news from Google anymore, why would I go to you anymore? But I think that everything that Rachel just said about, you know, we, as I said earlier, we've relied on Google for so long when it comes to helping, especially the long tail. The long tail publishers have relied on Google News because Google News has given them no choice, really, and trying to, and actually Google News has helped businesses grow where they might not have grown before because of the fact that it exists, and it would have helped us find different opinions and different ways of addressing certain types of news that we wouldn't have found from the big publishers that we all know and love across every single market. And that's been great. The long tail has become a bit wayward over this time as well. So maybe there's the evidence of some clawing back needed on that. But I think Google needs to really understand what Google. I don't think Google knows what it's doing. I don't think Google knows what to do next. Like Google's trying to, on the one hand, keep its users active and keep users firmly rooted in using Google for everything, as in the Google search engine for everything, but it also needs to understand that AI is here and AI is going to change the way that everybody searches. So it's trying to be able to provide everything to everybody. It's trying to be a one-stop shop where I think people are comfortable with not having a one-stop shop anymore. Like I'm comfortable going to different platforms for different needs. Whereas before I used Google for everything. Now I don't feel Google gives me what I want. And I feel that, that might come more naturally to me because of the industry I work in, but I feel like your average person will also maybe feel the same way and they will go to different places for different things because they're not getting what they want from Google. And Google trying to play around to make this one results page everything, I don't think it will work because you just don't know what you're looking at and you don't know what part of the page to look at to get what you want. Like if I Google Reddit IPO, I've got 10 news stories at the top. I've then got more news, but it's not listed as news. This is a results page. I've also got people also ask. Obviously, I've got no ads because it's not an ad-related search query, but it's just, and then I've got more related searches halfway down the page. Then I've got, and I'm just like, what am I looking at? Like back in the days when I used to work in paid search, if I look at what the SERP was then to now, I'm just baffled by it. And I don't really know what to do with it. And that's where I wouldn't go there anymore. But I think, you know, we're a publisher, right? We rely on the news tab, but you know our content features on the news tab. It would make a huge difference to us if they removed it. I don't think they would remove it, but I think that they wouldn't remove news, but they're trying to work out how to kind of, because they realize news for them is traffic, and as traffic is dwindling in other areas, they need to make sure they can at least maintain it in areas like news where they still get a decent amount of traffic. But I mean, only yesterday, like we there was a news come through that a big conglomerate of publishers across Europe have filed a $2.3 billion lawsuit against Google. This is more related to ad tech than it is to news, but all these publishers, and Axel, I think Axel Springer is one of the publishers mentioned, yes. Obviously everyone knows that, the biggest German publisher, all of these publishers have taken issue in the past. The Spanish government, the French government have taken issue with Google News' practices. So even though this particular lawsuit is around ad tech, there's going to be other stuff that comes out around it that will be referring to news as well.
Absolutely. And I wonder if, Lindsay, you know, the sort of user experience that you just described there, so, you know, rowing back even just a couple of years, everybody would still have been very comfortable using Chrome as a dominant browser for pretty much all of their, you know, internet query needs. Now people are becoming much more rehearsed at going to lots of different sources, very similar to the TV example that we gave in the first news story, which is that, you know, you now no longer expect all to get everything that you need in the one place from the one source. And I think that will just become commonplace. And I can understand Google's pushing back on that. They want to find a way to, you know, retain their relevance. They will, as long as they diversify into the products that are really working for them and the products that, you know, that everybody loves. But I think that's also the key thing here. People don't really love Chrome search anymore. It's just not that good. And, you know, they need to fix it, I think.
And also, I think in terms of that diversification, how has Google done that in the past successfully? It's always through acquisitions. Think of one original Google product since search that's taken off purely off the back of their own efforts. I'm really struggling to think of one. It's all through acquisitions. And now they
don't build, they buy.
Exactly. Yeah. And now they can't really do that because obviously they've quite rightly got, you know, the antitrust scrutiny on them. So how do they do that other than making a hash of it by suddenly removing the news tab and then having to backtrack and say, oh, it's still going to be here. Don't worry, guys.
We were just foraging around in the bushes and we've decided to – we couldn't find any nuts and berries, so we're going home.
Yeah, we've accidentally left the news tab under a leaf. I think that's a suitably daft and silly point to end it on. But guys, it's been a really, really interesting forage with you, and thank you. Thank you ever so much. Rachel?
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure. And Lindsay?
Likewise. Wonderful time. Thank you all.
Thank you all ever so much for listening. That was this week's Mad Tech Podcast.